This is Metal Mike, and in this episode, I'm joined by Midnight City singer Rob Wild, and we share our top 10 hair metal albums of 1987. Wow, 1987, what a year. We go through it all, and there's all kinds of nostalgic sound bites to refresh your memory of an epic year from hair metal's glorious past. Check it out. Rob, welcome back to the 80s Glam Metalcast, man. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Mike. Thanks for having me back on your show, dude.
Hey, man, it's my pleasure. I always enjoy talking 80s hair metal with you.
Likewise, Mike, likewise.
So let's get everybody up to speed to Midnight City. You guys put out a killer album this year, Itch You Can't Scratch. And like I said, I love it. I recommend all people, if you love 80s Kiss, Poison, Trickster, all that kind of stuff, this is right in line with that kind of music, man. It's killer stuff.
Oh, thank you, man. Yeah, yeah. Some good references there, because that's kind of how, you know, the whole album's based on those type of bands, you know. So if you haven't checked it out, you, like, make sure you do. But yeah, the album came out in June, and we've had incredible reviews for the album, to be honest with you. It's probably the best reviewed album that we've had so far, and the response has just been phenomenal. So yeah, the album came out in June. We did three singles and music videos prior to the album coming out. Let's see what else. We toured the UK in August. We did a really successful tour of the UK, and we also we played a lot this year. We played a lot of shows, additional shows, you know, just headline shows on our own. We played a ton of festivals. So it's been great. It's been so far so good in terms of this album. And you know, I've also been playing some solo acoustic shows, and I played a couple of festivals with Tiger Tales, and been writing for some other artists and do some session work. So it's kind of, it's actually been a really busy year this year. So, yeah, it's been a good one.
Oh, that's great to hear, because we all know, like, 2020 was kind of a bust. So glad to hear that, you know, you've been busy and very active this year. That's great.
Yeah, it started off this year was pretty bad, you know, the first kind of couple of months of the year. That's actually why, one of the reasons, because the album is actually supposed to be out in March, but our record label basically said, with, you know, the way things were, there's no point in putting out an album unless you can get out and tour and stuff. So that's why it kind of pushed back to June. And it was kind of around the summer here in the UK where kind of things opened up a little bit, and, you know, we were then able to go out and play shows. So it all made sense, you know?
Definitely, definitely. Well, we've talked a few different times on here about different topics, and we've been talking about doing a 1987 hair metal album list, man. And this was tough, wasn't it?
It really was, yeah. It was kind of, these are kind of like the glory years, but I mean, if we'd done one, say, for 88, 89, we'd potentially be here for about 3 hours talking about the album. But as of right now, it's just... you know, we're just doing the 87 years, and I've got some obvious albums, but there's actually probably a few that you might not know, so we'll see how we get on.
That's great. I always like to get exposed to something new that I haven't heard before. And one thing that I'll tell the listeners that I did, I've done a couple other ones where I just did metal in general. So you might see, you know, a heavy band intermixed with a hair band. But for this list, at least with you, I did straight up hair metal. Maybe at the end we could do some honorable mentions, and I've got some heavy albums, because there were some great, you know, like power metal, heavy metal stuff that came out in 87 too, thrash metal. So I've got a couple of those that I really like, but this one I tried to go just, you know, like the hard rock hair metal style.
Yeah, sounds good, man. Sounds good.
So why don't you just kick us off? Let's get right into it. This should be interesting. What is your number 10?
Right. Okay. So number 10, I've got Motley Crue and Girls, Girls, Girls.
Nice.
Which you might be a little bit surprised that that's kind of not higher, but, I've got to admit, I'm not the biggest Motley fan in the world. You know, I have all the albums, but they weren't like one of my favorite bands, really. But I really love this album, and this is one of those albums that, just looking through my list, there's a few albums where I kind of, you know, I got into the albums later on, and I bought them much later after the 1987 release date. But there's at least five or six that I actually bought back in 1987, this being one of them. So the previous year, I just got into music as a well, rock music as a 9-year-old kid with Europe and Bon Jovi. And then 87 was another big year because it was, you know, I was exposed to about like 3 or 4 other big bands from that genre, and Motley Crue being one of them. So I think this album's great. It's kind of a weird album because if you look at the actual track listing, there's 10 tracks, but there's a live cover version of Jailhouse Rock, and then there's the kind of, what's that song, Nona, which yep. is kind of like 1.5 minutes. It's not, I don't really know what's going on with that song.
Not a real song, really.
But I think You're All I Need is, I mean, that, what an incredible song that is. That's probably my favorite Motley Crue songs, to be mm-hmm. honest with you. And you can't really argue with Wild Side and Girls, 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 and, you know, All in the Name of Rock and Roll. And one thing I really loved about this album as well, I thought Vince sounded great on this album. Mm-hmm. I thought he, I know he gets a bad rap these days, but I always thought Vince was great. I loved his voice. He had tons of attitude. And so Motley Girls, Girls, Girls is my number 10. So how about you, Mike? What you got at number 10?
Well, let me just say, I won't comment on Motley Crue because this may be on my list a little higher. So I'll talk about my thoughts on the Motley Crue later on. So my number 10 is...
D, you just released a new album, Love Is For Suckers, here. Would you say it's a comeback for Twisted Sister?
I'm not exactly sure if it's a comeback, but we have gone back to our earlier style of playing, more to our roots than previous records have been.
Twisted Sister, Love Is For Suckers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
And this is one where, you know, most people don't look at this as their best album. And if you've listened to the podcast when we talked with Bo Hill, it was kind of spotty about who actually played on this album. You know, it was supposed to be a Dee Snider solo album, but whatever. For me, the first three songs are like my favorite Twisted Sister songs. Wake Up the Sleeping Giant, Hot Love, and Love Is For Suckers. I think those are like three of their best tunes. There's other tunes on the album that are really good too, and maybe that's kind of why I'd put this at 10, because like I said, I'm not crazy about all the other songs, but they're decent. But those first three songs are like awesome songs, and especially Hot Love. Have you ever heard Hot Love? You know that song?
Yeah. I've got to admit, I was never really a big Twisted Sister fan, but I've got one of my best friends over here is it. Absolutely, but Twisted Sister is his favorite band. So I always get whenever he's one of the roadies for Midnight City. So he comes out on the road with us, and whenever we're traveling around, I'm always subjected to Twisted Sister like for the entire time. So I do know a lot of their songs, you know, and they did have some good songs, you know, and I know especially Hot Love's a great song.
Yeah,
but yeah, he's a massive Twisted Sister fan. So. So he'd appreciate that. I think that'll probably be, you know, on my buddy's list, that'll probably be make number one and number two in terms of the albums. But yeah.
And Hot Love, like I said, if Hot Love was done by Poison or something like that, it would have been like a number one hit. But like I said, Twisted Sister was taking a swing at the glam thing. You know, it didn't work, and ultimately they broke up after. So once again, it's a cool album. It's a little bit, you know, all over the place. I think Reb Beach and Kip Winger actually play on it. So there's a lot of cool hair metal ties. Bo Hill produced it. So yeah, it's just it's a cool one. I like it.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with a Bo Hill produced album, can you?
You cannot.
He's the best.
He is, man. He is. How Absolutely. About number 9? What do you got for 9?
Right. So number 9, I'm going to throw you one of the curveballs here. So you may not have heard this band, or you may have done, but I don't think they ever really did anything in the States. It's a Swedish band called Treat.
Okay.
I don't know if you're aware of them or not.
Was Matt Slavin the singer at one point?
He wasn't on this album.
Okay.
Basically, Treat were, I think the album that I'm going to put in the top 10 is an album called Dream Hunter, which was their second album. So the first album wasn't all that great. Second album, Dream Hunter, the only thing I can say about it is just, like, it's Europe, basically. It's Europe with a different singer. Mm. It's unbelievably similar to... you know, the Final Countdown era Europe. Everything about the album kind of sounds the same. It's almost as if they just took the Final Countdown album and they said, okay, let's use the same drum sound, let's use the same guitar sound, let's use the same keyboard sounds. And honestly, if you put Joey Tempest singing these songs, it's a Europe album. And they did, I think they did about two albums after this, which weren't quite as good. And I think it, Mats Levin was singing in the band in kind of like the early, I think he replaced the guy who sang on this album.
Okay.
And they released an album sort of early 90s, which was pretty good. And then I think they split up and they kind of reformed in the 2000s. I'm not 100% sure what they're doing at the minute. But this album, if you've not checked this out, if you like that kind of, you know, Europe sound, you know, there's a lot of keyboards. There's a song called Take Me On Your Wings, which is like the standout track of the album. I think you'd like this album, Mike. It's very, very, like I said, it's more Europe than Europe. So that's all I got to say.
That's cool. No, I've heard of Treat, but I don't think I've ever heard a single song by them. So, yeah, I'm going to check that one out. So, like I said, that's why I like doing these. I like when somebody will throw me one and say, hey, have you ever heard that? And if I haven't, you know, I'll go check it out because, hey, I'm always looking for, you know, new music to discover. So who isn't?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's a good hair metal album, so I think you'd dig it, Mike. So what have you got at number nine then?
Close the blinds, turn the lights way down, and turn the volume up. It's Saturday night. Time to rock.
Well, I've got Ace Frehley's. Is it just called Ace Frehley, Frehley's Comet? I think at this point it was called just Ace Frehley, and the album's called Frehley's Comet. But yeah, but I got the Frehley's Comet album, and I love this album, man. You know, it's just real. When you go back and you revisit it today, it's just simple. You know, maybe call it like meat and potato rock and roll. You know, it's almost like AC/DC in some respects, like at least a lot of the Ace stuff. It's real simple. Even lyrically, it's really juvenile, but I like it. It's catchy. You know, stuff like Stranger in a Strange Land and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's real simplistic. And Rock Soldiers is just a killer tune. Into the Night is awesome. And I've always liked, a lot of people don't like him, but I like Todd Howarth. And I think like Calling to You and some of the stuff that he did on their breakout is really cool. So, yeah, man, I've got Frehley. And once again, you know, I'm a Kiss freak. And I think that album stands up. Like I said, it's good straight ahead, just rock and roll.
Yeah, it is. Rock Soldiers, what a great song that was. That would have been a great Kiss song, you know. But it is. It's just straight to the point. There's nothing kind of too complicated about that album. Mm-hmm. But that one didn't make my top 10, but it's a great album nonetheless.
Yeah, man. What do you got for eight?
Right, number eight. Okay, we got another curveball.
Another one.
This one is. Yeah, and I've got one more, and then I think you'll probably know the rest. But number eight is an album by Jeff Parris, and the album's called Wired Up, and this came out obviously in 87. I don't even know too much about Jeff Parris, but he was kind of like obviously a solo artist. He ended up after this album, he went on to write for everybody. You know, he wrote songs with Paul Stanley and tons of other artists. But this was his debut. I think he did like three albums, but this is his debut solo album. And this is just, I mean, it just sounds like, I guess like Bon Jovi is the obvious comparison here. Big late 80s, you know, commercial Bon Jovi type rock. But what's interesting about this album is that there's four tracks which went on to be on the first Vixen album. So if you remember Vixen, then I think this album had the songs, I think it was Crying, Love Made Me, and Charm Life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was, what's the other song? There was another song. And basically, he put out the solo album in 87. It didn't really do anything. And then a year later, four of those songs ended up on the debut Vixen album. And obviously, Vixen had quite a few hits, you know, yeah. Especially with the song Crying.
Yep.
But they were actually initially recorded and written and recorded by Jeff Parris on his Wired Up album. So it's a great album. Again, this is one that I think you absolutely love this. If you check out Jeff Parris' Saturday Night, which is the first track off the album, it'll be right up your street, Mike. I'm telling you, you're going to love this one.
All right, man, I'll definitely check it out. I've heard that name, but I have never heard any of his song. Well, obviously I've heard Crying by Vixen, but I haven't heard his version. So yeah, that's cool, man. I'll definitely check that out. Once again, glad to hear another one that's a little bit more rare. That's cool.
Yeah. So what you got for number 8?
All right, you're going to get mad at me because this is an album you like a lot. I don't like it as much, so you probably can already guess what it is. You want to guess what it is?
I know what's coming. Yeah, it's going to be Kiss Crazy Nights, right?
Yes. Good one, man. You get bonus points.
I know you too well by now, Mike.
Yeah, I got Kiss Crazy Nights. Once again, you know, I want to like this album. I love Kiss. I remember even when I bought it as a kid, I was okay with it, but I didn't ever think it was as good as Asylum and then as some of the earlier Kiss albums. So it's just a little too thin, and I feel like there's too many duds on there for me. But you know, Turn on the Night, that makes the album. That's the best song. That's one of the best 80s Kiss song, in my opinion. Turn on the Night is so good. And I even like a couple of Jeans. I like Thief in the Night, and I like Hell or High Water. But some of the ones like My Way and some of that stuff, I don't know. It probably would have been better as a Paul Stanley solo album, some of that stuff. And maybe that's something we talked about before when we did that Kiss ranking. But yeah, I mean, I like Crazy Nights, but you know, I gotta have a Kiss on this list because they're my favorite band, but it's spotty for me. It's just spotty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You probably, you know, obviously it's no surprise that Kiss featured pretty highly on my list, but you're probably right, you know, with the Paul Stanley solo album thing. A lot of the songs do sound like they could have been, you know, it's definitely more of a Paul album than a Gene album. But I'm glad that it still made your list anyway, so
yes,
that's good.
It made my list. And there's a couple that are on my list that people are going to be, like, shocked, but, you know, we'll talk about that afterwards. So what do you got for 7?
Right, 7. Okay, so this is the last one that you, borderline, I'm not sure whether you've heard of this band either, but the rest you'll know. But this, number 7 is a German band called Bonfire.
Oh, Bonfire,
the album's
yeah.
And the album's called Fireworks. And this one, I didn't get in 87. This was a band I discovered years later, but this album's great. I think I'm right in saying this was their second album. It was produced by Michael Wagner, so you know, a big, obviously big name producer who produced Skid Row and Dokken and a million other bands. And it's kind of how I would describe it is kind of almost like when the Scorpions were at their glammiest and the kind of their most hair metal. I think their album was, I think it was Crazy World album. I think from 1990 when they were at their kind of most sort of American sounding. It kind of sounds like that. There's quite a lot of keyboards on it. It's a little bit Bon Jovi in places. It's almost kind of like a German Bon Jovi, basically. And there's some great songs on this album. Sleeping All Alone is probably the standout track off the album. There's also a really kick-ass song called American Nights. It's just a really, really good album. They did, and I think the follow-up to this album came out in 89, an album called Point Blank, which was pretty cool. They did a good, like, big MTV video for off that album. But this really is their kind of like standout album, really. And I used to play this one a lot. I probably discovered this in the early 90s, but this album got played a lot. It's very, very cool. So do you know this album or?
You know what? I'm not familiar with the songs on it. I mean, obviously I'm familiar with Bonfire because of Sword in the Stone. And I know I've heard other songs and videos, but that's another one that I probably have to go back and revisit. Yeah, I'm not super familiar with Bonfire.
Yeah, it's kind of like, obviously it's, they covered Sword and Stone for, I think it was on the, was it on the Shocker soundtrack? I can't remember.
Yes.
But, yeah, so the album, just the album in general sounds very similar to kind of Sword and Stone. There's a lot of those type of songs on the album. So if you like Sword and Stone, you'll really dig this album. There's some great stuff on it.
Awesome.
So yeah, another one for maybe you should, you know, check out, Mike, when you get a second.
Yeah, I will, man. I definitely will. So here, this is one that this is a band you know a lot about here. You know a lot about this band. I got Tiger Tales, Young and Crazy at number 7. And, you know, I just love this album. One thing, and I don't know if I've told you this, but I think I told Jay this, is that I bought this album without ever hearing a single track off of it. The cover was enough to sell to me. You know what I mean? I saw the cover and I was like, yeah, this is my kind of stuff. And I didn't know what I kind of assumed what they would sound like. And I was pretty close, you know, what they did sound like. But a little different, you know, like they were a little bit more nastier than some of the other hair bands. And Stevie James has a super interesting voice. You know, it's kind of like, it reminds me of like Dizzy Dean Davidson. So there's times where it's a lower voice and then there's times where it's a screech. So I always thought his voice was cool. And just so many great songs, you know, like Hollywood Killer and Shameless and She's Too Hot. It's just great stuff. So, you know, obviously that's one that you know a lot about and maybe you can offer some thoughts on, but that's my seven.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we could probably go to number six for me because that's Tiger Tales You Run Crazy is number six for me. I absolutely love this album. Obviously, as a singer of Tiger Tales, I know this album very well. I mean, it's still my favorite Tiger Tales album. You know, I discovered Tiger Tales in 1990 through the Berserk album, okay. Which was actually a big hit in the UK. It was a top 40 album, and they're one of those bands that you know, were on the verge of, you know, breaking out and being a big band. Unfortunately, they never quite got to that stage, but they were big in the UK in 1990. So I didn't really know anything about the You Run Crazy album until I did a bit of, you know, reading up in Kerrang! Magazine and stuff, and I found out that they got this album out with a different singer, and I bought this on vinyl, and I'm the same as you. You know, I mean, it was a very cleverly marketed album, because I think whether the guys wanted to admit it or not, I'm pretty sure that the label said, well, Poison's really, you know, popular, and everybody loves Poison, so let's kind of steal the album cover. You know, let's put the four faces on the front with the superly made up face, you know, the lipstick and the eyeliner and the big hair and everything. And they were really, they were kind of like the UK Poison / Motley Crue. But like you say, you know, it is a tougher album. You know, it's kind of, there's a times of, you know, on the album where it's quite punk, you know, this album, yes. You know, in places. And, I always loved Stevie James's voice as well. I thought he was great. I was lucky enough to, I've been in Tiger Tales now for 10 years, but, prior to that, I actually played guitar for Stevie James for a short amount of time, back in, God, like 2009 or something like that. And I played, three or four shows with him out in Scandinavia. And, so I got to know Stevie really well. And, I've always loved Stevie's voice. You know, I think he's got so much attitude and everything he did afterwards. You know, his solo stuff that he did after getting Fire from Tales was great. Mm-hmm. And then he did my Private Hell album in 2009, which was like one of my favorite albums of that kind of, you know, era of time. And, he was just great. I thought he was, I much preferred him to Kim Hooker, who replaced him. And it's kind of weird as well because, you know, as you know, I used to live out in the States, and I know that, you know, the band that I had at the time, Sins of America, they were all very familiar with Tiger Tales because the first album was, you know, I don't know what label it was on, but it was released in America. But I don't think Berserk, their second album, was even released in America as far as I'm aware, because they knew nothing about like a second album. And I was like, oh yeah, the second album, Berserk, was the one that was their big album, you know. I still much prefer the first one. And we still, you know, I played some, as I said earlier at the start of the show, I played a couple of shows with Tiger Tales this year. We've been away for a while, but we played a couple of really cool festivals, and the majority of the material is from Berserk, but we still play, you know, three or four songs from this album. We still do, like, you know, Living Without You, Star Attraction, Shoot to Kill, which is Hollywood Killer sometimes. So we still do play some stuff from this album. And, I'm like you. I love this album. I think it's great. It's really trashy, but in a good way. And it's kind of one of those songs as well where, because I think how it was recorded, it was quite cheaply recorded, and it was, you know, the production isn't great, but it still kind of sounds like relevant. It doesn't sound dated at all because it's so trashy. It kind of, you know, like some of the albums, like, you know, that had that big 80s production and the keyboards and all that, you know, Kiss, I mean, yeah. Crazy Night, as you know, is one of my favorite albums, but it does sound very dated, whereas this album, I think, still sounds quite fresh. Yes. Just because of how it was recorded. So there you go.
You made me think of a couple of things while you were talking. I'll try to see if I can remember all of them. I think in the States it came out on Music for Nations. Could be wrong on that, because I don't know if I have my original copy anymore. I think I had it on tape or something, so I don't know if I have it anymore, but I could have swore it was Music for Nations. Never had a video, but it was in music stores next to all the other metal. You know what I mean? So it was in the stores. I got this first before Berserk. Now, somehow I got Berserk also on a cassette, but that must have been an import. And at first, I'm going to be honest, I didn't really like Berserk when I first heard it because it was so drastically different than Young and Crazy. But then it took a while, but after a while, I'm like really into Berserk now. You know what I mean? So like it took me a while because it was so drastically different. But and one more thing about the album cover itself, not only does it have that Poison look, but almost like from a graphic standpoint, it's really bold and it catches your eye. Something about that turquoise and the yellow, that album cover really pops. Whoever designed that was very clever. And yeah, those are just a couple of things. As you were talking, my wheels were spinning. So
yeah. It was definitely on music. I mean, they're on Music for Nations over here in the UK for both, you know, the first album and the second album. So I'm presuming that was the same, you know, which was a decent, you know, it was an independent label, but it was a big independent label, you know, because obviously, you know, the first Poison album was on Music for Nations, and Stryper, I believe even like an early Metallica album was released on Music for Nations as well.
Yes,
so
yep.
they had a good label, you know, it was a good decent sized label that, yeah, it's a shame that it didn't blow up, you know, because, you know, they had all the ingredients to be a, you know, a big band, and say, you know, in America as well, you know, but, yeah, that album, I still love the album. I play it a lot. Even though I'm in the band, I still dig the hell out of that album.
So it must be my six. All right, now we're getting into the big guns, right? I'm assuming your list is going to be all big guns, and mine's going to be big guns. So I'm going to put it out there. Number six, 1987, self-titled, man. It's great stuff. I mean, it's probably a little played out at this point, you know, because like I said, we've heard so, like, you know, Here I Go Again and Is This Love so many times. But this album is pretty damn heavy. You know, stuff like Crying in the Rain and Still of the Night is really, you know, groovy, heavy stuff. And I love it. I mean, obviously, it's a huge seller. I don't know if it sold like 10 million copies or something like that. But it's a big one. And I'm assuming it was obviously, I know it was kind of like Whitesnake's American breakthrough, but I'm sure this was huge in the UK too.
Oh yeah, it was. Yeah, I've got Whitesnake featuring in it further up my list, so we'll talk about that a little bit more when we get to that one. But yeah, I've got Whitesnake in there as well. I love that album. I think it's great.
Yeah.
So I've got number five. This was an album that I loved when I was a little kid. And it was one of those bands that I discovered through, you know, they had a big single, I think it was like a number one, I think it was number two single in the UK, which was amazing for a rock band, and the song was Alone, and the album is Heart, Bad Animals.
My third, Heart Live. Start the holiday weekend at Starwood with Heart.
Ooh, okay, Heart, yeah.
I loved Heart as a little kid. It was kind of, I thought they were great. And I absolutely played this album to death when I was a kid. And then backtracked and got the album before this, the 85 album with, you know, These Dreams and What About Love and all those songs, those big songs. And then the album after this was great, the Brigade album.
Yep.
But this one was, it just reminds me of being a little kid. And I remember vividly going to, I think it was Woolworths when that was still open. I don't know whether you guys have that shop over in the States, but I remember going and buying Heart, you know, with my pocket money. You know, it was one of those albums alongside Kiss and Whitesnake and Def Leppard where I bought the cassette, you know, when it came out pretty much. And I played this album to death. And it was kind of funny as well, kind of funny story because my dad, when, you know, we were driving around in my dad's car, whenever we were going on holiday or whatever we were doing, he would only let me play certain cassettes in his car stereo. Like, he would never let me put Whitesnake on because he was too, as he called it, it was too noisy. And that's kind of like my dad's way of saying it was too heavy. So there was only certain albums that he would allow me to play. One was like, he was fine with Europe, and the only other band he would allow, you know, to play in his car stereo was Heart. You know, he was a big Heart fan. So it's kind of like got a lot of kind of nostalgic reasons attached to why I really like this album. And there's some great songs. You know, obviously Alone is the power ballad of all power ballads. Ballads, but there's also, you know, There's a Girl's a great song, who Will You Run To, Strangers of the Heart. There's some really good songs on this album. I thought they were great, but they're one of those kind of weird bands where, a bit like Whitesnake, where I only really liked the big American sounding albums, because prior to that, you know, they were kind of like more the, I suppose in the early 70s and early 80s, more like a folk rock kind of band, which I was never, almost like more of like a Fleetwood Mac type thing. Yeah. And then suddenly, you know, in the mid 80s, you know, they'd sign a new record deal with Capitol. And, you know, basically the label said, look, you know, we need to get you guys, you know, looking and sounding big for the 80s. You know, they got, you know, Diane Warren and all these outside songwriters in, you know, Mutt Lange and people like that. And obviously the Image with the big hair and everything. And, but those three albums, 85, this one, Bad Animals, and also Big Brigade, I thought were three really cool Heart albums. So that's my number five. What have you got at number five?
Well, real quick, you know, about Heart is like, you know, I like Heart as well, and I kind of forget, you know, you forget they were kind of like a hair band. I kind of forget about that, you know what I mean? So I didn't even think about them. I probably wouldn't put them on my list anyways, just because I didn't get into them at that point. I think I didn't get into Heart till kind of like the 90s, because, you know, a lot of the hair metal thing was drying up. And I remember Heart put out like some acoustic album, The Road Home, which was really, really good.
That's
like,
right.
Yeah, it's almost like all those bands that did acoustic albums in the mid 90s, like Kiss Unplugged and their album there, stellar, because you could just realize how talented these people are. But anyways, and then I think I backtracked, and then I bought the 80s Heart and the 70s Heart, and I kind of went down the wormhole of Heart more in the 90s. So this didn't really capture, I mean, once again, I thought they were good. I remember the videos. They always had, you know, the big videos, and I didn't mind any of those songs. I guess I never, they probably weren't heavy enough for me at the time to include with the stuff I was listening to. You know what I mean? It kind of just probably escaped me a little bit.
Yeah.
So number five is a band that fit into, you know, the pocket of what I liked back in the day. And this is White Lion's Pride. And just, you know, it's phenomenal. I mean, what can we say? Mike Tramp and Vito Bratta. Good stuff. I mean, I don't ever get sick of Wait and Tell Me. And that's what, I guess that's the difference with those songs. Like, I hear those songs a lot, but I don't get sick of them. But I get sick of some of the Whitesnake ones. So that's why I feel like I want to go back to this album more often than I would want to go back to the Whitesnake album. And even, there's so many other songs that didn't get a lot of attention, like Hungary and Lonely Nights and, you know, Sweet Little Love. And you could go through all those and say that those are great songs too. So, yeah, White Lion, man, that was the total package.
Oh, I agree. Well, I've got White Lion Pride at number four. So,
oh, okay. See, yeah.
Yeah, number four for me. The same thing. I absolutely loved White Lion as a kind of teenager. As a front man, Mike Tramp was kind of like one of my idols. And, you know, I probably stole a few moves from him and stuff,
right,
you know.
Right.
But I absolutely love this album. I'm a huge, huge White Lion fan. I think, you know, my favorite White Lion album is probably Main Attraction, which came out in 91. But you can't argue with this album. I mean, this was their biggest album. You know, I think they sold like 2 million copies of this album. And it's cool, actually. A couple of years ago, I did an acoustic tour with Mike Tramp, which was great.
Awesome.
I was opening up for him, and ended up, you know, getting to know him quite well. And me and him kind of got along great. And it was great to hear all these, you know, he had so many amazing stories about, you know, because they got on some big tours back in the day. You know, they opened up Kiss, they opened up for Aerosmith, AC/DC.
Yep.
Ozzy, like, I mean, the list was endless. You know, every pretty much every big arena tour, they pretty much got. I remember they came to the UK in like 89 with Motley Crue as well, Motley Crue and Skid Row, and they're one of those bands. I thought they had all the ingredients to be a lot bigger than they were. Obviously, you know, Mike Tramp looked like a rock god, and you know, Vito on guitar, probably in my opinion, the best 80s guitar player.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm surprised. I mean, I guess they were fairly big in the States, but you know, I think they had the ingredients to have been one of the top bands, but unfortunately they never quite, you know, got there really. But I love this album too. You know, Hungry is probably my, you know, the track one off the album. I mean, that's probably my favorite song of the album. But anything White Lion is, you know, I can't say enough good things about them. I just thought they were great.
That's funny because Main Attraction is my favorite one by them too. I think like they were just, everything was coming together, you know, the songwriting and the sound quality. Yeah, I love that one. And you know what I think might have hurt them? You could say like too bad the Pride album didn't come out maybe a couple years earlier, but I don't think Big Game is that strong of an album. I think if they put out a stronger album in 89, they would have had a better run, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think the problem, I remember speaking to Mike about this, the problem that they had at the time was they came off the Pride tour and they'd basically been on tour for 2 years, and the record label said, right, we want a new album like now. And they basically, apparently they wrote Big Game, the entire album, in 10 days.
Wow.
So they were kind of just like, we needed, so they basically, he told me this great story of, you know, they came off the road, they basically, Mike and Vito just hold themselves up in the hotel for 10 days, and they wrote, you know, the 12 songs in 10 days, recorded it, and within like about 3 or 4 months, the album, they're back on the road again. So they were kind of rushed, I think. I think they, you know, been given a little bit more time, because I think Big Game, even there's a lot of filler on Big Game, but there's still, I'd say there's still probably a good five or six really good songs on Big Game, and then the rest of it is kind of a little bit, you know, filler. So it's kind of, half of it's great. You know, I just think if they'd been just been given, like you said, if everything could have come out a couple of years earlier, I think, you know, maybe Pride had come out in 85 and then they'd done an even better follow-up in 87. I think that could have been, you know, what set them over the edge, you know. But yeah, I still listen to all the White Lion albums a lot, you know, even now. I never get sick of them. I think they're great.
All right, man. So here's my four. Now, once again, this was your 10.
Some even like the music.
I like Motley Crue. I like Girls, Girls, Girls. That's catchy.
So this is Motley Crue, Girls, Girls, Girls. You said you weren't big into Motley Crue, but I was huge into Motley Crue. And still am. They're probably like my second favorite band. And look, I'm going to be realistic here. This by no means is their best album. I don't think so. You know what I mean? I think they got way better albums than this. But there's a couple pieces of things that come together that make this one of my favorite eras of the band. I mean, this was the first concert I ever went to. I mean, come on, the spinning drum set and the red stage and the flame. I mean, you know what I mean? So that just makes me like the album even more and more. I do think that sound-wise, I liked where they were going, because if you think about it, Shout at the Devil is like a straight-up metal album. Theater of Pain's a little confused, right? There's some metallic tracks, but then you've got some bluesy tracks. It doesn't really know what it is. This one goes full on into the bluesy, sleazy, you know, Mick Mars slide, you know, guitar, all that kind of stuff. So I feel like they got it right, and I think the image fits too, because when you look at them, they had that really scaled down black leather image, the gritty, nasty sound. Even lyrically, it's a really dark album. Wild Side, super dark. Dancing on Glass. There's a lot of dark tracks that just about the kind of, you know, dark side of LA and of life and stuff. So I think when you look at it as a total package and everything, you know, when I got into the band and going to see that concert, which Whitesnake was the opener, so another band that was big in 87. So, yeah, I got to put it at 4, man. I love the Crue. And you're right. Vince Neil, I don't care what anybody says, at least in the studio, his voice is awesome. Nobody else sounds like him. And he's definitely an innovator when it comes to the glam vocals and stuff. So, yeah, that's where I got it, man. 4.
Yeah, I agree with what you said. Yeah, I mean, I thought Vince was, for me, he was kind of like the star of the band. I always thought he was great, great frontman, great singer. I would have loved to have seen that tour actually, because especially with Whitesnake open, that would have been awesome. You know, that would have been great. They didn't come over to the UK. They should have come over to the UK in 87, and I think I remember there's some weird story. I think it might have been around the time when Nicky was having all these big drug problems and stuff, so they cancelled the tour, I think, if I remember rightly. I remember they gave like some really lame excuse, which was has been joked about ever since. I think they said something like, don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure in Kerrang the reason for cancelling the tour was because of the bad weather. It was like over the winter that they blamed the snow or some crap. I don't know what it was, but that rather than saying, look, Nicky Six is overdosed and we can't go out, they blamed something about the snow on the roof or something. It was like a really famous story like in Kerrang, and it was just like a complete joke, so they never made it. They came over for the Dr. Feelgood tour. Like I said, they brought all the White Lion and Skid Row with them, which was amazing.
That's awesome.
But they never came over to the UK on the girls' tour. I'm glad you got to see them, Mike. I bet that was a great show, right?
That's a tough first concert, Rob. You know what? But then again, the second one wasn't too bad either, man. Cinderella, Winger, and Bullet Boy. So I had a couple bangers for the first two concerts I ever went to. So those were good ones.
Definitely, yeah, yeah.
What do you got for number three?
Right, so number three.
Right taste. I think absence makes the heart grow fonder.
The revamped Whitesnake brought back the 70s style of hard rock, and lead singer David Coverdale found his true love in Tawny Catane, who became his fiancée after appearing in three of the band's videos.
I've got Whitesnake 87.
There you go.
Obviously, yeah, you touched on it. I'd kind of flip-flopped him a little bit. Again, this was one of those albums that I bought as a 10-year-old kid in 1987 on cassette. I remember discovering Whitesnake through, they had a couple of big hits in the UK charts with, I think, Is This Love was first, and then Here I Go Again. But I remember seeing the Is This Love video and kind of thinking, as a little 10-year-old kid, they kind of like, they've got that Bon Jovi look going on, but, you know, the singer's definitely a lot older than Bon Jovi, but they kind of, back then when you're a little kid, you kind of like put things in boxes, and I saw the big poodle hair and everything. It's kind of a little bit like Bon Jovi, a little bit like Europe. So I bought the cassette, and then I was just like, whoa, this is like, as a little 10-year-old kid, like the heaviest album I'd ever heard. You know, I wasn't expecting it because I'd heard Is This Love, obviously the power ballad, and, you know, Here I Go Again, which is, you know, super poppy, but like I say, you know, Crying in the Rain and Ooh, Still yeah. of the Night and Bad Boys and Children of the Night. It's a kick-ass sounding album. It really is. So much so, like I said, my dad wouldn't allow me to play it in his car.
Too noisy.
So, but I know, right? So I absolutely love this. And probably one of my favorite songs on the album is Straight for the Heart, which was one of the kind of like more album kind of tracks on the album.
Yep.
But I love this album, and again, Whitesnake, a bit like Heart, really. Whitesnake are one of those bands that I only really like two albums. Like, I loved Slip of the Tongue, which came out in 89. Absolutely loved that album as well. Probably I like that album maybe a little bit more than the 87 album, but I remember getting this in 87, and then, again, hearing about the fact that Whitesnake had been around for quite a while before this. And I think I bought the album. I think it was Ready and Willing or something like that, the album before this. And I just didn't like it at all, because that's when there was still that kind of British blues rock type of band. And this album was without a doubt, again, it's like A&R people saying, look, you know, you've got to change your image, you've got to update the sound, Americanize everything, you know, for the 80s. And then after Slip of the Tongue, they kind of went back to the kind of like British blues rock thing, which I had no interest in anything they did after that. But those two albums, what I call the big American albums, I absolutely loved. And I played this album to death when I was a kid. I absolutely loved this album. I thought it was great.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because I like Slip of the Tongue better than this album, too. And, you know, you're probably pissing off some of your fellow UK listeners here when you say, you know, like that old British blues.
I hate anything that sounds – I always have. I've always hated anything that sounds British because I think, like, to me, you know, and there's a big scene in the UK for what we call, quote-unquote, classic rock. And really, classic rock is that kind of very bluesy, British-sounding rock music, you know, like Thunder and bands like that. And,
yeah.
You know, nothing against them, but I was always into the big, commercial, poppy American sound, you know. So, that's why I love these two albums. And like I said, everything else that Whitesnake have done, I just can't get on board with it at all. It's just, but those two albums are absolutely phenomenal. I love them.
Yeah,
I actually listened to the 87 album not long ago. I hadn't listened to it in years, and I was like, God, this album's still really, again, one of those albums, it doesn't sound dated, you know, it still sounds just as kick-ass as it did, you know, the first time I heard it when I was a 10-year-old kid, you know, so, yeah.
So number three, I got Dokken, Back for the Attack, man. I love this album. I think there's a lot of songs on this album, but I think every song is good. I mean, obviously, you're kicking it off with Kiss of Death and Heaven Sent. I love So Many Tears. And the thing ends off with just like an added track that was out earlier, but Dream Warriors is probably one of my favorite Dokken songs. Some people don't like Dream Warriors, but yeah, I'm a big Dokken guy. I think the combination of George Lynch and Don Dokken is just an amazing combination of guys, kind of similar to the way Mike Tramp and Vito Brada were. You know, I think those two make the band. And yeah, man, I love Back for the Attack.
Yeah, I wasn't like the biggest Dokken fan, I've got to be honest. I mean, I had all the albums. I think this is definitely their best album.
Yep.
It's not made my top 10, but I'd say this is definitely their best album. And George Lynch, what an incredible player he was, you know.
Oh,
and
crazy.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons that, again, this is terrible, but like one of the reasons I think initially as a kid I wasn't that into them was I never thought they looked all that cool, you know. they kind of like, yeah, and that sort of put me off them, you know. I kind of like, yeah, George Lynch kind of looked cool, but the rest of them all kind of looked a bit, they didn't look that great. So I was kind of, especially as a little impressionable like kid, you know, unless the band looked cool, I wasn't going to give you the time of day. So Dokken was a band that I got into much later because, you know, I had older friends who would, you know, say, oh, you got to listen to this. And I liked it, don't get me wrong. I mean, but unfortunately, yeah, they didn't make my top 10, but that's, I agree that that's definitely the best album for that.
You know what I always hated? When there was a guy in the band that had short hair. Like three guys would have long hair and then one guy would have short. This is when I was a kid, you know what I mean? I know it's super, very superficial, but that would be the thing that would always drive me crazy. Like that one guy, why? Was it consistent?
Yeah, I agree. You know, you gotta get it right. You know, I never thought, you know, why did Alec John Such have, you know, Bon Jovi, why did he have short hair? You know, what the hell's going on? Grow your hair. You're in a rock band. You know what I mean? So,
agreed.
Yeah, I was the same. It was very much when I was a kid initially, you know, what would initially interest me in the band was how they looked,
yep,
first of all. And then it would be, you know, sometimes you get lucky and they'd be an amazing, you know, they have amazing songs. Other times, you know, I buy albums and they looked amazing and their albums aren't that great, you know, but yeah, the image thing was a really big thing for me when I was a kid, and especially if they kind of, which, you know, is hilarious now because, you know, we're kind of getting on a little bit now, but like, you know, if any band kind of almost like, even like, you know, David Coverdale in 87, I mean, he must have probably been, realistically, probably be in his like mid-30s or something, I don't
right.
know, but to me, he looked really old. You know,
yeah.
And it was only because I thought the music was great that I kind of gave him a chance, because otherwise I'd have been like, well, that guy's too old. He shouldn't be, you know what I mean?
He's it's too old of, to be rock and roll.
So, exactly, right. So, yeah, and here I am how many years later still doing this, yeah.
Right? I know, right? We're hypocrites. What's your two?
Yeah, yeah.
For two, man. I'm dying to hear your one and two. What do you got?
Right. Number two, I've got Kiss, Crazy Night.
There we go. There it is.
This is a tough one because I was like, I'm not sure whether she's going to make number one, but no, it's coming at number two. I mean, what can I say about this? We talked at length about this album on the last time I was on the show, and it was my introduction to Kiss. I just loved everything about this album. I totally get why it's one of those albums that a lot of Kiss fans don't like. But to me, I just loved it. I thought, you know, obviously, yes, it was Kiss trying to be Bon Jovi, and it was Kiss kind of following a trend rather than leading it and selling out a little bit, the keyboards and everything. But I always loved bands with keyboard players, and I love the keys on this album. I do think it does sound really dated, but I love how dated it sounds. You know, Ron Nevison is probably my alongside Bo Hill, is probably like my favorite producer, and I just love this album. I'll fight hell to hold you. Like I said, Turn on the Night's an amazing song. Reason to Live, I mean, that song, how that song wasn't like a massive hit, I'll never know. You know, I've often said, you know, give Reason to Live to like a band like Heart, you know, they'd have had a number one single, you know.
Yep.
I think it was just because it was Kiss that it wasn't, you know. But having said that, you know, I mean, it was a big hit over here. They had a number four single with Crazy Crazy Nights, and I think I'm right in saying that the actual album was like a top 10. I think it was number four on the album chart. So it was Kiss's biggest album in the UK. So, like I say, even the Gene stuff, you know, you touched on it, Thief in the Night's great. You know, there's some good Gene stuff on this album. So yeah, this was a tough one because this was kind of neck and neck as to whether it was going to make number one. But it comes in at number two for me, Mike.
Okay, so my number two is going to probably surprise you and maybe some others. But I really liked this album a lot back in the day, and I probably like it even more now. Is TNT, Tell No Tales. I'm a big TNT fan. Ronnie Letacro, I love the kind of melodic Queen type guitar playing that he does. I love Tony Harnell's voice. I love the big choruses, the sing-along choruses that they have. I mean, you know, 10,000 Lovers in One, As Far as the Eye Can See, Listen to Your Heart, and even the ballads on here. I didn't care for them as much when I was younger, but when I go back and listen to them now, like Northern Lights and Child's Play, It's just great stuff, and I don't know if you ever got into TNT or not, but they're up there with one of my, you know, they're some of my favorites for sure. I love these guys, and this album is amazing. This and Intuition are just amazing albums.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, actually, this would have probably come in at like number 11 or number 12 for me. I was my favorite. I love this album. I probably prefer Intuition, which I think came out in was it 89?
Yep.
I think.
Yep.
With Tonight I'm Falling, Caught Between the Tigers, and all that.
Great.
They were kind of like a really unique sounding band as well, weren't they? They were, like you said, they had a lot of Queen influences, but they kind of, nobody sounded like them at all. They were such an original sounding band, and you know, Tony Harnell's voice, and I thought they were a great band. Yeah, absolutely great band. And like I said, if we'd maybe done like a top 15, this album would have probably come in at like 11 or 12 for me. So, yeah, I agree, man.
Well, I think I know what your number one is, so why didn't you tell me? Is it an animal? You know,
overcoming incredible odds, Def Leppard released Hysteria. Fans did not forget them during their four-year absence, and the album released.
Is it an animal?
Pretty obvious, but Def Leppard, Hysteria. What other album could it be? Just an incredible album from start to finish. It was one of those albums, I suppose, when it came out, you know, it divided a lot of people that, you know, the more kind of hardcore Def Leppard fans who, you know, more into the kind of the high and dry, more kind of AC/DC kind of sound, which I love the early albums as well. But God, I think there were seven hit singles off his album, I think, if I remember rightly. And I just think it's just a phenomenal sounding album. you know, obviously the big hits are amazing, but you know, I like a lot of the kind of more kind of album tracks. You know, I love the song Run Riot. It's probably my favorite song off the album. Gods of War is another big favorite, and but then you look at, you know, you look at, you know, Love Bites. I mean, what a song, what a ballad that was. And then you've got Animal, which is a total AOR kind of AOR heaven type song. Just everything about this album, I mean, it still holds up. And yeah, I'd say, especially like for my songwriting and stuff, and you know what I do in Midnight City and stuff, I'd say the big sort of three influences on my songwriting, obviously definitely H's Kiss, definitely Danger Danger, but a massive chunk of it comes from, you know, this album and, you know, Hysteria and Pyromania. They're just, you know, it's the best as far as I'm concerned. So, yeah.
Cool.
I can't sing this album's praises enough. So what do you think? What do you think about that, Mike?
I've never been huge into Def Leppard. I had, you know, I bought their albums when I was a kid because I felt like I was just like a collector of albums. You know, like that was a band you had to have their albums. But over time, they're just a band that I just don't go to a lot. And I don't know why. Maybe it's because they're so overhyped and, you know, people, you know, love them so much. And then maybe that makes me take a step back. I really don't know. But I have tons of respect for this album. I mean, the production, the songs. I'm not going to be some kind of fool and say this is a terrible album. I know it's not. The sales don't lie. But it's just something that doesn't really, you know, it just doesn't really sound great to my ears or something I want to listen to all the time. So, like I said, tons of respect. Wouldn't make my list just because it's just, you know, I'm just not wicked into them. And another one I'm glad to see that wasn't on your list, it's not on my list either, is Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction. Because, once again, that's not a bad album. It's just I like this other kind of stuff better. I'm just going to be, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I'm the same with the Guns N' Roses thing. I mean, I bought the album back in the day.
Yeah,
and
me too.
You know, I like the album, but I just don't think it's as great as everybody says as everybody says that it is. You know, I think it's a really great debut album, but you know, I think this album's just as good and much better than that one. I think it's just so overly hyped. You know, I agree with you on that. So what do you get as number one? Then?
Right.
I'm intrigued to hear
this. Right, because this was not on your list. A lot of people are going to be scratching their head on this one, but the ones who get it are going to be like, yes, I'm with you 100%. And it's Keel's self-titled album from 1987. That's my number one, man. And I don't know what it is about that album. I love Ron Keel's voice, especially this album has like some of, you know, we talk about like Def Leppard having the big choruses. You know, Keel was trying to do some of that too with United Nations and Somebody's Waiting, songs like Cherry Lane, I Said the Wrong Thing to the Right Girl. I mean, I love all those songs. How this album and how this band did not get huge, you know, in 1987, I don't know. Maybe because, like, you know, Bon Jovi was still so big and Whitesnake and some of these other guys were just, you know, overshadowing them. I know they're on MCA Records. Not too many bands fared very well that were on MCA Records, so that could be part of it. But Keel had all the right ingredients. They just never made it big. But there's just something, once again, and I'm not trying to put this at the top, you know, to be cool and you know, try to not, you know, avoid some of the big albums. I just love this album. I mean, I don't think a lot of their other albums even compare, you know what I mean? So I wouldn't put Final Frontier. I wouldn't even put this in the same ballpark as this album. But yeah, this is my number one, man. I just think this is so cool. And once again, it was something that I was really into when I was a kid and haven't strayed from it. Still love it today. So it takes number one.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that was, the Keel was kind of a strange band for me because, again, I didn't think they looked that cool.
Right, yeah, I gotcha.
So I was kind of, I don't know whether I like this band or not. And I know what's really funny is, you know, I've got a friend, a guy called Jules Millis, who used to sing for Tiger Tales before I took over.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Keel is his favorite band, and he was constantly, when he would be over in the UK, constantly trying to turn me on to Keel. And, you know, you've got to listen to these albums. These are incredible albums. But yeah, maybe I need to do, it's funny actually, we, at the beginning of, not last year, the year before, Actually, no, it was last year. It was right before all the COVID thing hit. But we Midnight City went out to play a couple of shows in Australia, and Ron Keel was there. He was playing like right after us on a festival. So I was hanging out with Ron Keel for quite a while in the dressing room, and we were talking about he's talking about working with Gene Simmons and yep. and Gene Simmons producing a couple of their albums, whatever. So he was a great guy, like a really nice guy. So it actually did make me think, right, maybe I should go and listen to some Keel albums. So,
go revisit.
I'm gonna go.
Do it. Yeah, go revisit that 1987 album produced by Michael Wagner. There's some monster songs that should have been hits on there. Yeah, that's where I would go if I was you.
I'm gonna check it out, Mike. Definitely. Yeah.
Give me a couple, and you don't have to even talk about the album. Just if you've got a couple ones that almost made it, just rattle them off, and I'd be curious to see like who maybe 12 and 13 and 14 and some of those other ones would have been for you. Who do you got?
Well, definitely TNT. Definitely.
Okay.
Tell No Tales would definitely have been one of them. Another album that I absolutely loved as a little kid, which kind of doesn't really fall into the hair metal kind of bracket, but is a debut Richard Marx album.
Ooh, okay.
Which is kind of more, more pop rock, more kind of a poppier guy. But I absolutely loved that album. Really, really loved the debut Richard Marx album. I really liked The Wasp. I think it was Live in the Rock.
That's on mine too. Yeah. I usually don't count a live album on one of these, but yeah, if it was Anything Goes, that might have been my number one. I love that.
Yeah. Technically not, a studio album, but I loved, as a kid, I absolutely loved Wasp. So they'd definitely be in there. That's kind of it. Guns N' Roses definitely wouldn't have made any list for me, really. That was kind of, like I said, a big overrated album for me. But yeah, I'd say those three. How about you? What have you got?
Well, for like just straight up hair metal albums that probably were on the fence, Faster Pussycat's debut, Great White, Once Bitten, YNT, Contagious, and then I've got a lot that I kind of put in a category of like metal, because I really have always liked heavy stuff too. I mean, I think Alice Cooper's Raise Your Fist and Yell is cool. It's kind of a little bit more heavier for him. I loved Anthrax, Among the Living. That was an album I bought when it came out. I'm huge into Manowar, Fighting the World. That could have been number one if it was Anything Goes. I love Sabotage, Hall of the Mountain King. I mean, that's probably most people consider is their best album. I've got Wasp, Live in the Raw. You know who was on my list, but I cut them off because I felt like they just maybe were a little too heavy, was Lizzie Borden, Visual Lies. I love that album, and I had it on this list, and then eventually I was like, you know what, let's just go with like the straight up, let's not even make, let's not confuse anything. Let's just go with the straight up, hair metal, hard rock type stuff. And then Dio, Dream Evil. That was another one I just wasn't sure where it fit in, but I loved that album as a kid and still love it. So I like a lot of heavy stuff, heavier than, some of the stuff that we had on the list. So I kept those off and just went with the straight hair model. But yeah, I mean, with all the things we've mentioned, what a year.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah, it'd be great talking about these albums. I mean, we're going to have to, you have to get me on his show again. We're going to have to do another year. Like I say, if we pick 1989, we could technically be talking for about 5 hours, so maybe best not to pick that year. I don't know, but we've talked about some good albums anyway, that's for sure.
That's for sure, man. Well, hey, it's always a pleasure talking with you, and we'll definitely do another one. I've done a few other ones, but I have not touched on like 85 and 86, and like I said, I think there's some really solid stuff in those years too, so who knows.
Yeah, that'd be great, man. Yeah, and just before I go, I just got to tell you guys about you and your listeners about just what we've got coming up next year, if I can. Midnight City's back in action. We got another UK tour kicking off in February. They only come out at night. Tour kicks off on February the 11th. But a couple of extra cool things that we got coming up. Each Account Scratch is coming out on vinyl on March 4th, and it's going to be red vinyl and silver vinyl, and it's going to be a gatefold sleeve. There have been a few delays with this because of, you know, with our label, but that's a lot to do with all the COVID crap, and there's been a lot of delay in albums being pressed and stuff like that. But it's officially 100% coming out on March the 4th. And also, the last thing I wouldn't mind telling you about is our first two CDs, the first two Midnight City albums, the self-titled debut and There Goes the Neighborhood. We actually don't have any physical copies left of either CD, and our old record label are out of stock as well. And we have a lot of people coming up to us at shows, and you know, who've actually just discovered us on this album that are backtracking. And nowadays, they only, you know, if you want to get one of the first two CDs, you're looking on eBay, and they're like going for like £100 and stuff like that. So, long story short, we're reissuing both CDs because we got the rights back from our old record label. We're releasing both CDs in February, and each CD has two bonus tracks on. And even better, we recorded two brand new tracks. So there's going to be one on each, and we're going to be shooting a video for one of them. Just after Christmas, and that's going to be coming out before our tour in February. So, yeah, we got a tour in February, we got vinyl coming out, we reissues, we got a new video, and then we got a ton of shows. We're playing festivals out in Europe, in France, and Germany, and Ibiza, and we're going to be all over the place. So, yeah, make sure you look out for the reissues, and you know, you'll be able to order the reissues via our website and, you know, on Facebook and stuff like that, and obviously the vinyl as well. So lots coming up for Midnight City, that's for sure.
Awesome, man. That sounds great. And as all that comes together, let me know. I'll put it out on my page. But yeah, I wish you guys lots of luck in 2022, and always a pleasure talking with you, man.
Yeah, you too, Mike. Thanks for having me, dude.
Well, that was great going through all those albums with Rob. Make sure you follow Midnight City on social media to keep up with all they've got going on this year. Rock on!